From Mount Pleasant to Port Allegheny, Phillipsburg to Uniontown, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, with many businesses closed to fight the Wuhan coronavirus pandemic, life-sustaining businesses, including banks, remain open. Here to report on how the state's banks continue to function is Kevin Shivers from the Pennsylvania Association of Community Bankers. Office space occupancy rates are one way to measure the economic health of a city. Frank Gamrat from the Allegheny Institute in Pittsburgh is here to talk about how Pennsylvania's cities are faring. And the time has come for the state legislature to loosen restrictions on telemedicine and to take other steps that improve access to medical care. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Kevin Shivers from the Pennsylvania Association of Community Bankers in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. It looks like Pennsylvania's primary election is going to be moved from April 28th to June 2nd. The proposal received unanimous support in the State House of Representatives after several controversial provisions inserted by Democrats were removed to gain bipartisan support. Governor Tom Wolf supports moving the date of the primary. Already, counties faced a monumental task of training election boards to deal with new voting systems and relaxed provisions for absentee or mail-in balloting. The delay will allow counties to better prepare for the election and hopefully move the election well past the crest of the coronavirus outbreak. After initially failing to place gun dealers on the list of exemptions from mandated business closures, Governor Tom Wolf backed down and declared that gun dealers are, in fact, life-sustaining. The governor's move comes in the wake of a case filed in the state Supreme Court arguing that gun dealers have a constitutional right to remain open. An opinion authored by Justice David Wecht and joined by Justices Donahue and Dougherty agreed, saying that, quote, "It is incumbent upon the governor to make some manner of allowance for our citizens to continue to exercise this constitutional right." That order requiring non-life-sustaining businesses to close their physical locations set off mass confusion as businesses attempted to determine whether or not it applied to them. Among the professions successfully arguing to be placed on the life-sustaining list are lawyers. A Harrisburg-area attorney successfully argued that by ordering law firms to shut down, the governor was denying individuals their right to legal counsel. The state Supreme Court agreed. Numerous other businesses, many in the supply chain for those businesses deemed essential, have also had their ban on operations lifted. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Banks and other financial institutions are among the businesses that continue to operate as the nation limits social interaction in an effort to slow the spread of the coronavirus. Kevin Shivers is president and chief executive officer of the Pennsylvania Association of Community Bankers. He's a familiar voice to our listeners, as he was part of our Capital Watch crew for many years, but today we're going to talk about banking during the coronavirus crisis. Kevin, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Kevin, of course, during this time when folks are being asked, ordered to stay at home, the question arises, how do they have access to banking, bank services, to their money if they need it? Is the banking system solid and still able to respond to consumer needs?
The banking system in Pennsylvania, Loman, is essential, and the banks are open. Not only did the governor declare that banks are a life-sustaining service, but that also has been backed up by the federal government, which has designated the banking industry in Pennsylvania as a critical infrastructure. So banks are open. It's important that listeners know that they have access to their cash. They have businesses have access to capital. We need to keep the credit systems open, and we need to be available to serve our consumers and our businesses here in Pennsylvania.
So if I need to access a banking service, say I need cash, I need to make deposits, whatever, still do that as usual?
Weeks before We got to this pandemic level here in Pennsylvania and the country. Bank CEOs and community banks all across Pennsylvania had been working around the clock to prepare for this moment right now, because they realized that at some point we were going to be facing the storm, and they put together protocols to not only keep their customers and their employees safe, but also to make sure that Pennsylvanians had access to their money. And so these pandemic protocols are in place. What's important to know is that the banking system we have, using technology, consumers are able to access their money online. They can make special arrangements going to their ATM. They can make special arrangements by telephone with their personal banker if they have specific personal banking needs. And the community banks are taking extraordinary steps to create access for their customers. Many are offering extended hours using the drive-through teller windows, but now parking lots at many banks have become the lobby as facilities themselves have been locked down. So if you absolutely need banking assistance, personalized banking assistance, we would encourage listeners, call your local bank, make arrangements to come in. If you need coins, you need to exchange change, they can do that for you, but you're probably going to have to wait outside in your vehicle while that happens, and then they'll return that to you. You may even see a bank employee walk out into the parking lot, very similar to, say, the way Chick-fil-A conducts its service during the rush hour. But community banks are taking this extraordinary step because for them, you know, this is a challenge too. There are some community banks in Pennsylvania that haven't locked their lobbies in 120 years. And so this was a culture shock. Many of them had to take weeks to be able to get around that, because with small banks, it's business with a handshake. And so we're in a new time. But these community banks are committed to making their environment safe for their workers, for their customers, and to make sure that they have access to their money.
That's at the retail level, Kevin. So just globally speaking, or nationally speaking, the overall infrastructure of the banking system in the United States, obviously our economy has suffered a tremendous shock. You know, we've seen a historic drop in the equity markets. Businesses are shuttered. But is the national infrastructure, how's it holding up under this pressure?
Yeah, our national financial system is strong. It's backed up by the Federal Reserve, which has been extremely helpful in supporting banks and making sure that they have adequate liquidity. In addition to that, all the deposits that are held by your listeners and their local banks are backed up by the full faith and credit of the FDIC. They're all insured. And in addition to that, right now, Congress is debating absolutely historic level of investment for small businesses, that many small businesses being able to work through their local banks, the Small Business Administration as well, are going to be able to access cash for payroll, for working capital. And the federal regulators have also given banks an unprecedented level of flexibility to work with their borrowers. In the past, if a bank were to make special arrangements, adjustments to a borrower's terms, that bank was penalized by the federal regulators. Now, those banks have been told by the federal regulators, you need to do what you have to do to make sure that your business borrowers, that your consumers can manage this. Because this is an instance, through no fault of anybody's, that we're in this economic situation. And clearly, the federal government, the federal regulators have been working with Pennsylvania's community banking system to support them as well. So the national financial system is strong. The Fed is making sure that banks have the available capital. The regulators are making sure that banks have the flexibility to work with their small business borrowers and their homeowners. And, you know, the community banks are the tip of this financial spear, and they're working with their local communities and supporting their local communities like they've done with every other disaster that has hit our country in the last 150 years, I should say.
We are talking with Kevin Shivers of the Pennsylvania Association of Community Bankers. Let's talk a little bit more about small businesses, Kevin. We have a situation where the guy who owns the local pizza shop, the couple who run the local dry cleaners, They've been forced, required. Restaurants can do some takeout, but most businesses in Pennsylvania and across the country are forcibly shut down by government. So when we emerge from this, hopefully within the next couple of weeks, those small businesses are going to have to restart, but they're going to be missing a month or more of revenue. So are we looking at federal and state programs that are going to be available to help provide the cash, the liquidity that these businesses are going to need to be able to, among other things, pay their rent, pay their bills, pay their employees, and get people back to work?
Yeah, right now Congress is debating a historic investment in the small business economy. I think the last that I had heard was $350 billion in available resources to invest for small businesses to do exactly what you're talking about. Because, you know, these are businesses that were not sacked because of a decision that they made. They have been put on the sidelines by government. And you could argue that's for the public good to stop the spread of this horribly infectious disease. But they need support. First thing I would encourage those small businesses to do that have loans or that are struggling right now and trying to figure out what they need to do, to reach out to their local bank, see if they can get a deferment on a short-term basis for their loans. That there are many banks that are foregoing this month's loan payment or next month's loan payment or restructuring the terms of their loans. And additionally, there are banks who are working with businesses to provide operating capital so that they can continue their operations when the economy gets going. Additionally, as part of the federal legislation that's being discussed, there is additional payroll support for employers who are holding on to their payroll. There are proposals for incentives for those employers who are able to keep their workforce.
Let's talk again about consumers. When we snap out of the closures here, hopefully very, very soon, there are going to be people who were in the process, who were about to buy a house, close on a mortgage. Maybe we're going to buy a new car, but weren't able to do it because the dealership was temporarily closed. Are those type of consumer loans still going to be widely available whenever we restart our economy?
Home closings, loan closings are still actually happening around Pennsylvania, again, because the banks and the credit system are considered critical infrastructure by the federal government and life-sustaining services by Governor Wolf. Those types of activities are happening right now, although in some areas they've declined. It's a lot harder, obviously, to get into the courthouses for certain filings, title searches, et cetera. But in some areas, you have loans that are ready to go, and they're in the process of being closed, and the banks are available to do that. Certainly, if you have a mortgage application or a bank loan of any type, make sure you work with your bank right now to find out what is going on, what are the circumstances in their local community. But again, we're gonna get through this. This is a tsunami, if you will, that has hit the country. But the economy is going to come back, and community banks are going to be leading the way for their communities, their small businesses, their homeowners in their local areas.
Kevin Shivers is president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Association of Community Bankers. Kevin, tell us a little bit about the association. Also, where's a website folks can go to not only learn more about your organization, but find out how they can get answers to their questions about financial activities?
In Pennsylvania, there are about 140 community banks. It's a special philosophy within community banks. All those deposits are kept locally, and then those banks will invest those deposits in local business loans and in home mortgages and in supporting community projects in their local neighborhoods. So it's community is a part of the culture of the community banking system. It's just not part of the name. And your listeners can go to two websites. They can visit the pacb.org, which is the main homepage. There is a coronavirus page where consumers can learn all about information that they need in working with their bank during this experience. But also, if you visit hometownbanker.org, you can watch some films and see some communications describing that really personal relationship that community banks have in their local hometowns. And you'll understand why these community banks are stepping up in this moment in supporting their communities during this coronavirus pandemic.
Kevin Shivers from the Pennsylvania Association of Community Bankers. Kevin, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
This is the time when we normally have the Allegheny Institute report, Eric Montardi and Frank Gamrat, but in view of the fact that everybody's working from home these days, we are going to just have a one-on-one today with Frank. Frank Gamrat, good to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Loman.
You have been working at the Allegheny Institute over the years. You've kept track of a number of key economic indicators. Among those are vacancy rates for Class A office space in our major cities. And this, of course, is a key economic indicator. You have a new policy brief out. How is Pittsburgh faring when it comes to filling that office space that we see in all the gleaming towers downtown?
Not doing too well at the end of 2019. Of course, we use data from a real estate research firm called Jones Lang LaSalle, and this is all available on their website. But the Class A office vacancy rate in Pittsburgh's downtown stood at 15.9% at the end of 2019. Now, what makes that rate such a eye-opener is that just out of the last recession, it was one of the second lowest rates in the country at 5.2%. So you've seen a tremendous percentage point fall in vacancy rate. Now, again, to keep in mind that we look at this as sort of a harbinger of economic times. You know, are companies coming into the area or are they expanding within the area? Those are very good questions. We have a mayor and we have a political system here that likes to command the economy. They want to offer incentives and they're trying to reimagine the area, but you can't force people to be here if they don't want to be. So vacancy rates tend to really give us a good idea as to how those efforts are coming. And they're not going very well. You know, perhaps our most iconic building in downtown is the U.S. Steel Tower. It's our tallest building. It's 12% vacant. We have another building here, William Penn Place, which used to be the headquarters of Mellon Bank at one point in time. It's almost 60% empty. Westinghouse, of course, most people are familiar with the Westinghouse brand. They're almost 30% vacant. So you see, some of our iconic buildings have a tremendous high vacancy rate that we look at as a very bad sign for the Pittsburgh economy. Now, again, back in 2013, Pittsburgh had a great rate. It was better than that of Austin. It was better than that of Boston, Los Angeles, and Seattle. Again, the second lowest rate of a 53-city sample that this company looks at. And here we are, not even 10 years later, and we're now one of the worst. Now, even if you expand that out and you look at the rate for the area, the Pittsburgh area, we're at 17.6%, whereas 10 years ago, it was a lot lower. Now, one of the reasons why everything was lower, as soon as Pittsburgh came out of the recession, we fared much better than a lot of other people because of Marcellus Shale. We had a lot of energy companies moving in here, gobbling up space. And we had the tech firms. We're very proud of the fact that we've got a lot of autonomous car manufacturers in here, or at least the research folks in here doing their thing because of the relationship with Carnegie Mellon and, of course, the University of Pittsburgh. So you had a lot of tech companies come in, but you had those Marcellus Shale companies come in. With the price of Marcellus Shale gas falling, with the price of natural gas falling, those companies aren't really expanding anymore. And in some cases, they've reduced operations significantly. So you lost that segment of your economy is not nearly as strong as it once was. And of course, that's starting to reverberate throughout the market.
The fact that Pittsburgh also at one time was a hub of corporate headquarters. We've seen a number of corporate headquarters leave Pittsburgh and go elsewhere. Has that contributed to the vacancy rates?
There's no question. To piggyback on your point, of course, Alcoa used to be a big headquarters here. And of course, they then moved up to New York. And perhaps our most iconic business was H.J. Heinz. They merged with Kraft, and now their corporate headquarters is in Chicago. So you see that kind of movement, and there's nothing to fill it. There are no other companies coming in here to fill that. And so we would ask our mayor and the leaders here, you need to do things to make this this economy, this area more attractive, bike paths and jogging trails are not going to lead you to prosperity. You need to worry about tax rates and regulations to try to make this area more attractive to other people. Now, I know we have some listeners in Philadelphia, and to give you a little bit of a comparison, in 2019, the vacancy rate in Philadelphia's urban core, the Central Business District, was only 10%. In Pittsburgh, we're 15.9%. If you extrapolate that out to the area as a whole, Philadelphia's vacancy rate in the area is 14.2%, whereas we're at 17.6%. So you see there's a bit of a difference. Philadelphia's economy has actually fared a lot better than the western part of this state. You know, when you look at the number of jobs that have grown out there, the total non-farm jobs in Philadelphia actually went up about 1%. In Pittsburgh, it's down 0.4%. So now let's not get a big head here, because just because you went up 1%, Pittsburgh went down 0.4%. Think of this: the national rate was a whole lot higher; it was 1.5 to 2%. So it's Philadelphia and Pittsburgh are constrained by state policies that are kind of keeping it down. But Philadelphia at least had a positive growth rate, whereas Pittsburgh had a negative growth rate economically. And of course, you're seeing that in these vacancy rates.
We have been talking with Frank Gamrat, who is Executive Director of the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy in Pittsburgh. Frank, tell us just a little bit about the Allegheny Institute. We don't do that as often as we should. Tell us a little bit about the Allegheny Institute and where folks can go online to read this report.
Oh, the Allegheny Institute, we are a nonprofit, nonpartisan think tank located here in western Pennsylvania and in Pittsburgh. All of our research on a number of topics is available on our website at AlleghenyInstitute.org. And if you want, you can even follow us on Twitter. We have a Twitter link on our website, and you can catch our editorials and our policy briefs on Twitter.
Frank Gamrat of the Allegheny Institute. Frank, hopefully in a couple of weeks, when it's your time at bat here next, both you and Eric will be able to be back with us. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. You have a great day and stay safe.
The current coronavirus pandemic should spur legislative action to remove barriers to providing health care to more Pennsylvanians. So says Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
As Pennsylvanians and Americans, we're living in the midst of an unprecedented health and economic crisis. Our Commonwealth is uniquely positioned to take swift action due to our legislature being year-round and full-time. Policies that have been left on the table for too long can and should now receive votes and be sent to the governor for his signature. In just a week, we've seen the Department of State issue several press releases relaying the swift action they've taken around telemedicine and healthcare regulations and licensure requirements. We seek for policies that enable Pennsylvanians to have access to high-quality medical care at a price they can afford. We know that the supply of medical care is increased through the removal of barriers to innovations like telehealth and direct primary care, and through the expansion of nurse practice authority. At a moment in time where we're realizing how critical expanding access to care through lifting restrictions on both healthcare professionals and the system is, why would the legislature delay, even a day longer? Harrisburg's energy should be focused on getting help to those who need it the most. Here are some of the highlights on actions from Harrisburg at the executive administrative level just since March 18th. On the 18th, a Department of State release relayed that healthcare professionals licensed under any of the Department of State's Bureau of Professional and Occupational Affairs licensing boards could provide services to patients via telemedicine during the coronavirus emergency. That allowed healthcare professionals flexibility in doctor-patient treatment while permitting the social distancing standards that we've all been following. Additionally, the Department of Health requested and the governor granted the authority to allow healthcare professionals from out of state to treat PA residents using telemedicine. Why are we delaying to clarify permanency around telemedicine in Pennsylvania? We have a bill, Senate Bill 857, which Senator Vogel introduced, that has passed both chambers. While there are still a few persistent disagreements between chambers, we urge the House and Senate to find consensus move these forward for concurrence so that this important measure can be presented to the governor for his signature. We've also seen the Department of State waive a number of nurse licensing requirements to aid in the response to the coronavirus, including temporarily extending license expiration dates and waiving associated fees during this emergency. Also, the removal of barriers for pharmaceutical services for Pennsylvanians. The governor granted the suspension of certain licensure requirements to allow expedited temporary licensure to pharmacy practitioners and pharmacies in other states so they can provide goods and services to Pennsylvanians for the duration of this emergency. PA announced that retired healthcare professionals with inactive licenses could provide treatment following immediate reactivation of their license without needing the continuing education requirements and reactivation fees that are typically charged. So if some of these policies help increase access to care now, why wouldn't they help later? We have a nursing scope of practice bill sponsored by Senator Bartolotta. The legislation would permit advanced practice nurse practitioners to practice to the full extent of their education and training by removing the requirement for a formal collaborative agreement that is currently required of them to practice and write prescriptions. This would allow greater access to care immediately. We have a CRNA, or Certified Registered Nurse Anesthetist, title designation bill. It would update the PA nursing law to allow CRNAs to be recognized for their education and expertise and allow them to practice and get credentialed in other states when needed, particularly at a moment at a time like we're living through now, without the barriers they face in just having to prove their CRNA status. There's a need for the supply and availability of healthcare professionals like we've never seen before. Consider the cost of time and energy of the administration having to address these issues in a moment of crisis. And imagine instead what they could have spent their time doing, such as having more in-depth conversations with local municipal officials and city officials about their community's unique needs and what they need from the state, or having more targeted business closures with clarity around corresponding operating standards, which could have mitigated some of the confusion behind the essential versus non-essential categorizations from the governor's March 20th order. Had some of these policies just been in place, we would have been in a better position to help address COVID-19. Well, now is the time for action. Please visit AmericansForProsperity.ivolunteers.com. Find us on Facebook, search at PAAFP, and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director for Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 25 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WGET-AM and WGTY-FM in Gettysburg, along with WVMM-FM in Grantham, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.